Ladies and gentlemen, it is time to start your intellectual engines. Our summit begins. Thank you.
This is Ag Bioscience. It's a bonus episode. Welcome and thank you for joining. I'm Mitch Frazier, CEO of Agrinovis. This is the podcast where we explore all things ag bioscience, the people, the products, and innovations across food, animal health, plant science, and ag tech. Indiana made history last week as Governor Eric Holcomb and Indiana Secretary of Commerce Brad Chambers hosted the state's first Global Economic Summit, a truly worldwide event that welcomed more than 800 attendees from nearly 30 countries. Agrinovis led the opening discussion at the summit, focusing on technology feeding the future, the role of innovation and sustainability in the global food system. Joining us for the discussion was Elanco CEO Jeff Simmons in a one-on-one conversation that expanded into a panel that included Corteva Executive Vice President Robert King, Martha Hoover, founder and CEO of Patachu Inc., and Jean-Luc Tate, founder of Paris-based ag tech startup Horus Impact. This bonus episode of Ag Bioscience is that conversation at GES in its entirety. It was just too good not to share. Enjoy.
Well, good morning. It is good to be with you. Over the next hours, days, discussions, we're going to talk about how best we unite, how best we bring innovation together to fuel growth. Our first conversation today is one that takes on heightened importance. We'll clearly talk about growth, but this topic that we're about to dig into, this topic is one of existential consequence. It's a topic that we all have a direct relationship with, one that we all have a connection with, and it's one that every single one of us here must unite to tackle, to solve. This first topic is about food. We look at the United Nations, they estimate that roughly 1 in 3 people around the globe don't have access to adequate food. And the United Nations also forecast that there are roughly 2 billion people that will join this planet by 2050, further taxing the food system that we saw become extremely fragile during the global pandemic. We have an opportunity to truly transform how we think about the food system, particularly in a world where we face challenges at the most macro. We're in a world where global inflation exists. We're in a world where consumer choice is driving change in behavior in the food system. And we're in a world where the food system is facing a call to drive sustainability more than ever before. We are joined this morning by an incredible expert, someone who knows animal health deeply. He's a visionary, he's a bold leader, and he's a proven powerhouse when it comes to tackling tough problems. Please help me welcome Elanco CEO Jeff Simmons. Well, Jeff, it is good to be with you. It's good to see you. It's been, maybe a month since we last saw each other at your groundbreaking, just a few kilometers west of here. At that groundbreaking, you cited your global headquarters in the center of a metropolitan area. Big move. But you talked about this wasn't just a facility. This wasn't just a building. Right? You were building a movement. Share with us what that movement is and how it relates to food security and food sustainability.
Yeah, great. It's great to see everybody. This is a great setup. It's good to be back together, isn't it? It's wonderful to be back together. So building, we kind of said, is not the noun or the physical side, but the action side, as you said. And look, this has come over time. We're coming up on 70 years as a company being in the animal business. We kind of always had these seasons inside of Eli Lilly. We came out of Eli Lilly is, hey, you got to grow. It's part of the culture. So this mindset of always growing hit about 15 years ago with purpose. When John Lechleiter, Eli Lilly, and others said, if you're going to be a business unit here, you've got to impact people's lives. And that opened our eyes to something much bigger, which is, hey, animals and making animals' lives better can make life better. We're in the protein business. And just to your point, the importance of food security, that movement then really started kind of a faster cycle to say, boy, it opened up everyone's eyes on, we're going to play on much bigger platforms. That's going to be absolutely critical. And it really led to, hey, coming out of Eli Lilly as an IPO, it led to us acquiring Bayer Animal Health. And it really just kept a transformation going where, you know, in the shortness of that 15 years, we've gone from, you know, 1,500 employees to 11,000, a little shy of a billion to a little shy now of 5 billion. But it's all because of when you're responsible, you got to be more responsible when you're relevant and you're planning some of these bigger things. I think that's key.
Yeah, Jeff, your headquarters project, I think we should spend a little time there as we get into food security, because I think this is an important piece of the puzzle. This headquarters may be one of the largest ag bioscience investments in terms of a metro area in history. Share with us more about why this was the destination of choice. Right? Why did you grow the company here, and what did you learn through that process?
Yeah. Look, the state of Indiana and this opportunity, it wasn't a given, right? I mean, when we came and we are a public company and we acquired Bayer, big facilities in Kansas City. There were many states that we ran a pretty rigorous process. And what I would say is the state of Indiana responded. It wasn't just economics. It was the one Indiana approach, private, public, nonprofit, the community. We look at the west side, the location, be able to say, hey, they made the opportunity of a 50-acre facility in downtown. There's not many of those that are located there. And, you know, I would just say that the responsiveness, the understanding of our needs from the governor, the mayor, Secretary Chambers, Secretary Schillinger beforehand, it was second to none. We have people, you know, saying, we'll get back to you in a month and a half. Indiana said, we'll have an answer in 2 days. And so I think it was just a series of all that. But I would say the team would say it was the one Indiana approach that made that happen. And it leads to a series of things, right? I would just say it's a multiplier effect. I mean, you saw it yesterday with Eli Lilly, is there's a multiplier effect. So, hey, we get an IPO, we acquire Bayer, we set up a new destination in the headquarters. We now are gonna start an epicenter, bringing three new companies here already just since we started that idea. And now, you know, we made an announcement that we're acquiring Bovaer, a product that will reduce methane and cattle will cool the climate. I think the leading technology to have an environmental impact. And we're looking at a manufacturing footprint and need to make a decision on that. And the same approach is being taken by the secretary and by the governor. And it is my hope that, you know, down the road that here soon that we can say we're going to expand our Western Indiana manufacturing footprint with this product Bovaer and bring the leading technology in agriculture to cool the climate to the state. So it's a culture, a mindset that I think this current leadership, you know, they're leaning in a very big way.
That's big. I'd love to spend a little more time on Western Indiana. I'll let you take the pass on that public company in the sword. But you also made a passing mention to three companies.
Yeah.
That's the first time I've heard that, Jeff. You have two that you've launched publicly. Is there a third one that you're announcing?
Yeah, so we've one of the ideas here is just like any other company, you've got to have your strategy. Our strategy is we innovate products, we put them in portfolios, and we have access. We're one of the only two independent companies that can reach the world's animals. So being able to say, hey, we can reach water buffalo in India to tilapia in China to cats in Chicago, there's a lot of innovators. And this epicenter, which you've been a big part of, Mitch, is to do that. So we've launched a microbiome company called Biomedit, spun out of Elanco, that will do research on the microbiome in animals. Second is Athian. Athian is a company that Scott Dorsey and others with High Alpha here, and just part of the community, and Agrinovis. First company that can actually, for farmers all over the world, aggregate carbon credits, certify them, and monetize them. So farmers can. And today we announced, Bell will be on the pet side. Bell will actually be a digital connected care pet company, again, with a partnership with High Alpha that will help veterinarians all over this country reach pet owners when they can't actually be in the practice or the clinic themselves. So more to come, I think, because we've got the capital maturity of this epicenter that I think will, by the time our headquarters is built, a wing of that will be an incubator for these new companies.
That's exactly right. Well, Jeff, you've always been bold. You're not shy of taking big risks. And I want to step back a little bit. As we look at spinning out of Eli Lilly, giant pharmaceutical company headquartered here, you took that business, you took the animal health business out of Eli Lilly in 2018, successful IPO. You made another giant bet in 2020 with the acquisition of Bayer Animal Health, I think the largest acquisition ever in the history of animal health. And then just 2 weeks ago, I think it was now, your partnership to bring Bovaer to the U.S. market. Bovaer is a really interesting story, and I want to spend some time there, particularly as we look at this food security, food sustainability component. Yeah. Share with us more about Bovaer and how that really fits into this puzzle.
Yeah, so, you know, I think everybody, just real quick, I mean, we've got a, and we can talk some about food security, but the two biggest challenges I think the United Nations has, if you look globally, and I think we play at this economic summit right in the middle of it, is how do we feed the world, right, and how do we cool the climate? And they want to do that. They say there starts to become irreversible challenges and problems if we don't do it by 2030. And we have worked and harbored a lot of our customer base in the protein business. Two numbers to remember, 60 and 8. 60% of the world is getting the wrong nutrition. There's a third that is actually 30% that is actually not getting enough calories, like the African climate or the African continent and others. There's also countries like this where they're getting the wrong calories. And you'll hear from some of the panel probably on this, it's caused obesity and diabetes, etc. So we got to get in the right nutrition, and protein is going to play a role in that. You also got to cool the climate. And in COP26, it was very clear, greenhouse gases are made up of a lot of gases, but the two that everyone talks about is carbon and methane. Carbon, a long-lived, you know, gas, 1,000-plus years, that's not going to have an impact in the next 8 years, but methane is. And methane, Bovaer, our technologies and farmers can actually help reduce that. And so, you know, this is about reducing methane in a significant way. It's a short-lived gas. Bovaer alone can reduce 30 to 50% of methane coming out of cattle, which could, that alone is more than the whole industry globally has done in 20 years. This technology alone could actually have that impact. So, and I think, look, there's people that say, well, let's not, you know, eat animal protein. Let me just touch on that very briefly to say, we ate more animal protein as a world and as a country last year than ever before. We have 300 million metric tons have been consumed. The last 10 years, it's grown 60 million. The next 10 years, it's gonna grow 90 million, 50% more. Why? GDP growth. And the second is, if I ask for a raise of hands, how many people in the last year have been on some diet that had more protein and less carbs? Those are the two trends that have made this. So Bill Gates, I'm sorry, we're not gonna eat our way out of this. We're going to actually use innovation, and actually the cattle industry and the livestock industry can play a major role. And there's climate neutral farming is happening. We're close to making it more of a norm in the next 10 years. And there's farms here in Indiana making as much or more off the environment than they are off milk or off protein.
I think there's a really interesting piece there. We'll spend more time on this morning, but this sustainability conversation is one that must focus on environmental sustainability as well as economic sustainability. Right? There has to, the solutions, the innovations have to be durable.
Right? Yeah, absolutely. So I think, you know, without having, you know, I think a lot of the environmental initiatives are behind and haven't stuck and haven't had an impact. What I think excites me about agriculture is there is an opportunity. Today, there's three ways a livestock producer can get value. One is in the carbon market, and by capturing carbon credits, there's dairy farmers here in Indiana that are selling carbon credits to a state of California or other places. Their second is there's ESG, which is a big drive right now for CPG companies and others. And there's a scope three that they're willing to pay for as all these companies have made claims to be net zero. I think that's the second one. And look, the third one is even playing in the energy business with biodigesters and others. There's opportunities. So we believe there's a $1 to $2 billion new market in methane reduction, and that being done through and with the livestock industry. About a 25% increase in the value of that industry alone. So farmers can benefit significantly from this.
This idea of ESG, Jeff, is, you know, you can't open the page of The Economist or the journal or pick your favorite publication, not CSG, expected to be a third of all assets under management, depending on the horizon. Lots of different folks are forecasting this, but really a critical piece as we talk about sustainability and food security.
Yeah, it's moved now to, this is no longer corporate social responsibility and must put out a book every month or every year, and it's a nice to do thing, and this is gonna take and make a major shift, I believe, from business being a force for good to have an impact on society in a very significant way. Most every major investor in Elanco is expecting us, and they'll only stay in us and continue to be investors in us if we move significantly, trends of the impact on the environment, et cetera. And then everyone else is looking at the value chain saying, if you're part of my partnership, Tyson Foods needs Elanco to play a major role with all of their producers, or you don't have a right to do business. The next 5 years, ESG will become three letters that society will come to know, and I think society will benefit from.
Society here in the States, clearly, but all around the world.
All around the world, absolutely.
As you talk about this sort of system of systems, right, this labyrinth, it is the food system. Jeff, I want to talk a little bit more about innovation, because I think as we set the stage for this conversation around food security, innovation, big part of the Elanco story. You talked about Bovaer, we've talked about the acquisition of Bayer Animal Health, three companies you've spun out. How does your team think about innovation, and what role do sustainability and food security play in your focus on innovation?
Yeah, I think, and I'll even segue a little bit to what we're doing here. I go back to the Jim Collins flywheel of saying, built Amazon, I built, Eli Lilly spent a lot of time over the last 20 years building their flywheel. It's, hey, it's those disciplined key pieces of your strategy that you can do better than anyone else. And I think we look at innovation in that wheel to say, just like in Eli Lilly, we have to innovate. We have to bring first and best in class products to solve methane, to solve, give consumers what they want, animals what they need, and use less of the environment, or the aging pack, et cetera, that, how do we do that? Put them in portfolios, but then have access to the world. And so I think this is where I'm excited about this epicenter that we're bringing, and you've been helping lead here in Indiana, is we're not as sophisticated in animal health as human pharmaceutical. So we don't have the capital, the business models that have been designed in human pharma. So what we're doing here with this epicenter is saying Elanco can reach the world's animals. And there's a few other companies, here, even Corteva, that can. How do we bring innovators? How do we bring capital? How do we bring business models and incubators like High Alpha? How do we bring more talent here that wants to jump into these exciting industries and use the orbit of, companies like Medallion that are great talent pullers? And we actually add and sophisticate that. And that's, I see these three companies are an example of innovation needs to be more open, it needs to be supported early, and you need to be able to access markets quicker. And I think that's critical, and that's a key part of what we're gonna do in animal health.
You've talked a lot about the strengths and really the opportunity that's here. But if we abstract this, we think about the balance sheet of this place that we are building an epicenter together, that we as a community are building this together. Walk us through some of the debits and credits, right? What is working here, and what challenges exist that we can solve collectively?
Thanks for the question, Mitch. So I think we can get excited, but we also gotta look at both sides. We need a balance here. I think it's really critical. So look, on the positive side, even why we selected this, and this is gonna be our home, and we're gonna put more investment in this area in Indiana than any other place, is look, this is pro from an economic standpoint, affordability from a family, it's pro-business, it's, the coasts are moving to the center of the country from this pandemic, and there's a lot of positives here. For you and I, food, ag, tech, universities, we have the best university president, sorry I'll make that plug, in the whole world, in Mitch Daniels. We've got, a lot of the, Agrinova, CICP, so the community's right. That's the positive I see on the side. I think on the liability side, and it's been talked about, look, we gotta get a couple of the macro things right. You can't be bottom tier or in the bottom third on health. I think that's important. And there's a couple other factors in there that I think are things that we need to really look at. Education and health are not where they need to be, healthcare where they need to be. I think that's really important. But I think the biggest one is talent. This state, if we're gonna compete as truly the population moves more remotely and Indiana becomes a destination, it has to be a talent attractor. we're not where we need to be for diversity. I gotta look like my customer base. 9 out of 10 veterinarians from a vet school are females, consumers. And I need more diversity as a contractor here. We need to change that. And then I gotta make my little plug, a couple things hygiene-wise in the next 5 years. I think the cities that win in the middle of this country will be determined in the next 5 years. Two things that I see that need to, the center of this city needs to be more dynamic and cleaned up and improved to where it is. And I think the others, you know, the airport. I mean, today I have two destinations I need to get to. I love the airport, but I can't get to Kansas City and I can't get to Europe. And I know we're working on that. So I'm excited, though, as a whole, that, hey, when I look at the balance sheet, it's very hard to find a culture and a one Indiana type place anywhere else. And all the pros far outweigh, and the credits, the negatives, can quickly be fixed, and I know that they're on everyone's agenda.
Well, it takes leaders to, one, identify the problem, but to be part of the solution.
Yeah.
Right? And that's why we're here today, is to tackle solutions, small, big, global, and let's talk about food security.
Yeah.
And sustainability. You know, as we open the aperture and really start to look at this globally, you mentioned early on, this shift that we hear in very developed markets around, boy, we think we're going to move away from animal protein. We think it's more of a portfolio of protein.
Yeah.
Walk us through what role truly does animal health, animal protein play in the future of food security and sustainability?
Yeah, and we can talk more about that. But let me just stop on food security, everybody. The world's gotten shocked. We were improving. More people were food secure. More people were eating the right food. And in the last 2 years, the food insecure has doubled in 2 years, mostly because of the pandemic. Then in comes the inflation. Every 1% up is another 10 million to become food insecure. Then the war, Ukraine hits, the ports shut, big supplier of wheat. That's added millions more people that are now on the brink. China has close to 16 months of inventory of food. America, between 2 and 3 months. Many countries, weeks. Our food inventories are as low as they've been. You put all this together to say, hey, Indiana has an opportunity. No, Indiana has a responsibility, especially us in the ag and the food business. One of the biggest announcements this year you're gonna hear is Corteva moving their headquarters here, another major player on the plant side. We have to play a significant role. Regulatory, talent, innovation, fighting for exports. Food must cross borders. Animal protein will play a major role in that, no question. And animal protein is the fastest growing segment, protein is, in food today. And I always say, look, food is a personal choice. I jokingly said, for all the vegetarians in Elanco, we started a pet business to make everybody, you know, chase the cause and the purpose. But it's very personal. Nobody should change in what you can afford and what you desire to eat. What I would say is the world has spoken very loudly that animal protein, meat, milk, eggs, fish, is absolutely critical to the long-term future of the diet of the population. Don't think you're going to eat your way out of this or change a diet. I think animal agriculture can play a role in feeding, improving the health, lowering medical costs, and cooling the climate. That's the exciting space for you.
I love your focus, Jeff. And we're going to hear more about this from the panel here in a moment, but this idea of economics, like I keep coming back to this idea that profitability and economics have to be a part of food security. Typically, we think about them almost as two separate beings, right? Food security, make sure we get food people in need. That's really important. But to make that solution durable, to make that long-lasting, there have to be economics involved.
Yeah, I mean, let's not, you know, data has to, there's some prevailing forces that play, not just in business, but in life.
That's right.
You know, consumers choose, economics play. There's bigger forces we got to consider, the environment. You know, we can talk about organic or non-animal protein ways. They aren't necessarily more nutritious. It's a choice people are making. They aren't more affordable. They mostly aren't more environmentally friendly. That's why we need to be able to look at these things. For farmers to move and become environmentalists at another level, there has to be economics there. They're in a low margin business and a seasonal business. There's times where they make money 1 year and lose the next. I believe this opens the next frontier of economic sustainability will drive environmental sustainability. The past CEO of Tyson said, sustainability starts with profit, and that's what makes it sustainable and lasting. So inside of Indiana, the one Indiana, private, government, public, I think big company, little company, this is something very, very unique to the state that you can't find in other places.
Before we welcome the rest of the panel, I think it's important that we always share action stuff, right? Calls to action are important. Food insecurity, just before we welcome the rest of the panel, what needs to be done? What can people here do to really, really change the trajectory of food insecurity? Is it time invested? Is it money invested? What is it?
I think, you know, without question, you can always start local. There's a lot of initiatives even here to say, you know, Indianapolis is on track to be one of the first food secure cities with all the collaboration again. There's work to be done, but it's not just government and a SNAP program, but it's a lot of other things. So I think one is always start local. I think that's critical. I think the other is, look, I think the supporting of the big forces that I just mentioned, it's gonna come down to talent, having right people in right roles, the role that companies like Corteva and Elanco and others can play, innovation, the supporting of innovation. We have a regulatory body in Washington that has fallen from top tier to middle tier. We need to have more predictable, more consistent approvals of innovation to create more food on less resources and exports. This country and this state, exports really matter and are critical. Those are some of the fundamentals. Whether it's policy or whether it's positions companies are taking, I think that's important.
Excellent. Well, let's broaden this a little bit more and welcome the rest of the panel to the stage. President of Patitude Foundation and Patitude Inc. Jean-Luc Tete, he is CEO and founder of a really incredible startup we're going to hear about, Horus Impact. And then Robert King, he is EVP at Corteva of Crop Protection. Friends, welcome. Please take a seat. Really delighted, really, really delighted to have you all join us today. There is a lot to talk about, and I think it's really important that folks understand your perspectives and what you're bringing to this discussion. Martha, we're going to start with you. If you could maybe just introduce yourself and share with the team here your perspective on food security in the world.
Well, for starters, let me tell you what I'm not. I'm not an expert on global economy, on global food production, distribution, but don't worry, that doesn't mean I'm not without opinion. So I will hopefully be able to add some insight and color to the conversation. I started my first restaurant in 1989, having never worked in the restaurant industry and not knowing that I was pregnant with my third child. So as we always like to say internally, perfect recipe for disaster. However, the souffle keeps on rising for us. We now have 14 restaurants in Indianapolis. We're growing our mother brand, Cafe Patachou, by 3 units this year, and then we'll be stepping out of the Indianapolis market and expanding that brand. I have worked for the last 32 years building a values-aligned company that is critically focused on 5 things. One is obviously food sourcing. We're in the restaurant, that's our low-hanging fruit, along with quality of customer service. The 3 that really distinguish my company are our attention to the quality of staff experience, our commitment to sustainability and resiliency, and our commitment to the community. And regarding our commitment to the community, almost 10 years ago, my company founded the Patachou Foundation. Our mission at the foundation is to help solve childhood hunger in the areas in which we serve our restaurants. So in Indianapolis, where 1 in 5 children go to bed in hungry in our community. And we just thought it was inherently wrong that living in an agricultural state in the middle of the United States, we had that level of insecurity and hunger in our own community. So that's what I do.
Martha, it is terrific to have you here. And as a former prosecutor, it'll be fun to bounce back and forth here this morning. Really looking forward to the conversation. Jean-Luc, you have an amazing background, former auto exec turned into regenerative ag leader. Tell us more about the work you're leading.
Well, first of all, very happy to be there among you to share this story. I've spent more than 20 years in auto industry, working for 2 of the top 10 group promoted group leading some major subsidiary of these groups. I was working, I was born in Central Africa Republic. So I spent 20 years in Europe, born in Central Africa Republic. And we're talking, when we're talking about food security, Africa is, you know, the main place where this subject is important. And Central Africa Republic is the second poorest country on the world. 60% of the population is living in food penury. 2 million people in severe lack of food. The local production, although it is an agriculture country, you know, 80% of the population is doing agriculture, the local production is less than half of the needs. So you have amazing result out of that. For example, you take cassava. People are eating cassava every day. They are produced, cassava is produced locally. And the penury is so such that cassava is, in Central Africa Republic, the most expensive cassava of the world. It is extremely expensive because lack of production, and this is what people are eating every day. And this country is very spread out. So you have people on the east side of the country, so 2,000 miles away. How do you get to them? With very poor infrastructure. So it's this situation which is really incredible. And these countries, you know, they are living the climate change. It's not a theory. Climate change there means something, really, strongly impacted. And on top of that, you know, this is a place where you have the Congo forest, one of the most important forests of the planet for our security here. We're living a very fast deforestation, strong deforestation. People are going in the forest, picking up wood for cooking in the big cities, which are growing like crazy. So you see, I was, you know, in my nice job in Paris, and say, okay, guys, do something. Can't go like that for a while. So I said, can you imagine if we had a solution that could produce food in volume at affordable cost, good quality food? Can you imagine if we had a food production that can, on the same time, produce good food, cost effective, but as well regenerating the forest or stopping deforestation and regenerating the forest? Can you imagine if we have a solution that could be on sites where people need it the most? And last but not least, being an industrial guy, say, oh, what if this solution was a good business case? Let's make it. So then I started, I founded Always Impact, based on one idea, is to say, we have to take the soil as a partner. And only this perspective changes completely the way we are thinking agriculture. So soil as a partner, then we're doing what is called today regenerative agriculture with different techniques. So we have a full know-how, build up full database to be able to take the soil as a partner and use it, guide it to high yield with very limited chemical inputs. And specifically to our way of production, we combine it with a strong agroforestry. So as a complete ecosystem and production system together with agroforestry. And last pillar of our production model is we are transforming on-site directly. So we produce the raw crop and we transform on-site so that this model can be spread anywhere, you know, on the east side of the country, but in any other country in Africa, and why not in any of the region in Europe or in America. So this production model in itself is available to be able to be spread out. And we managed to make it interesting business case.
Jean-Marc, really, really interesting. Eager to spend some more time. Robert King with Corteva. Corteva, Jeff mentioned earlier, Corteva just named Indianapolis their global headquarters. Robert, this is a really incredible time to be in agriculture. Share with us more about your background and the work you lead at Corteva.
Yeah, thanks. Excuse me. Thanks for letting me be here, and on behalf of Corteva. It's Corteva's a, as you said, right here in our backyard. Moved headquarters here about 2 months ago. But you know what we're really about is we're using technology to solve solutions, and we do so by trying to make the grower add value to them to help them be more productive, because that's a key piece to food security. Is we have to have the acres that we have more productive. And so with that, you know, our goal is to provide sustainable and innovative solutions to them to help them meet the challenges they have today. And when you think about, you know, the way we position our business and how we fit in this chain, it's a grower shouldn't have to make choices. You know, you guys were talking earlier about, you know, profit and profitability, but yet sustainability. And it's not an either or decision. It has to be a both and for us to solve this. And so that's how we try to go to market is provide solutions to the grower that are both innovative from the standpoint of more productivity and value for the grower, but also sustainable. And we think that's a model that has to be successful. I'd say the other thing that where we try to work is being very collaborative. You know, solve this problem from a world, it's not going to come from any one organization or any one segment. It has to be a collaboration across the entire industry, the entire chain, to say, how do we get better in all facets? And so, you know, we have a lot of collaboration going on in development. So we have true discovery and development in our backyard here. And so we're looking for ways and working with startups to, you know, establish multinational companies to say, how do we collaborate together, get all the smart minds to be able to solve these problems? And that's a core model for us as well, because again, that's the sum of the parts has to be part of it. So, and then, you know, the last thing is, you know, part of this, and I applaud Indianapolis for doing this, in that we have to become part of the solution. And some of the things that we're doing at Corteva right now is supporting the Global Food Security Index. And what this is, it's a group, Economist Impact. But this group, what they do is they're looking at the drivers to food security and saying, okay, on a country by country basis, what are these key drivers that we need to find solutions for, to get ahead of or be proactive in solutions? So, you know, this is something that is core to how Corteva operates. And you know, the fact we're sitting here in Indianapolis is right in the heart of you know, agricultural, but it's core to how we operate as well.
Really good, Robert. Thank you. And I think all of you have highlighted innovation as a key driver. And I think it's important that we anchor on how big this problem is, right? There are folks here from, you know, 30 countries. We have people from all walks of life, different industries. If you could, just a quick comment on how big is this problem? When we talk about food security, food sustainability, sort of help anchor this conversation. Is this something that, boy, compelling call to act now? Jeff, you want to start us out?
Absolutely. I think Robert said it. I mean, we've got to give consumers what they want. I think Martha represents that as well as anybody here. You know, we've got to give the farmers, the animals, the land what it needs, and we got to use less environment. I think this third dimension brings something that is an opportunity. We not only can be part of a problem, but I think we can create a next era of economic opportunity. And economic and environmental sustainability is absolutely critical. I would hit two things on innovation that I think are critical.
Please.
One is sourcing. If you look at Elanco's top 25 innovations, most of them did not come solely from inside, to Robert's point. Innovation takes openness, collaboration. Some of the best inventors are small. So what we can do, I think even here in this state, collaborating. We've got one of the leading plant companies, animal companies, a lot of small innovators, Agrinovis. We have to incubate and pull ideas in. We don't have a sophisticated capital structure. The first 18 months of an innovation is make or break. Many of the best ideas have never continued long enough to be discovered. So I step back and say, we've got to let inventors do what they can, encourage them to be here, and then how do we leverage the One Indiana openness to bring openness to innovation? I think that's, and fund it, and incubate it, and drive it. I think that's critical. We have a few things together, actually. One of our bigger products actually came from Corteva. So, and then I think the second is talent. We can come back to that, but it all comes back to people. And we've got to have some of the smartest, you know, craziest thinkers, and it can't be just, well, it's a land-grant school, let's go pull some people. We need people from all over the world. We had a meeting this morning with India, the ambassador from India, how important talent we get all over the world to be able to do things. And I think that's, those are the two things to me that I would say can, you know, excel and multiply innovation faster than anything, is incubating, innovating early ideas longer, and bringing talent into our companies.
Other thoughts on big, largeness, scale of this problem?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I agree with what Jeff's saying, in that, you know, the uniqueness of Indiana is one that doesn't jump off the map as, in that we're sitting in the Midwest America, or excuse me, in the middle of America, right? And, you know, we talk about being the crossroads, et cetera. But if you walk over to our campus, we have 700 people there that are working on discovery. And it's an international community by design, because it has to come from all walks of life to find ways to do that. And that's not something that, you know, you think about when you think of Indiana, but it's sitting here in our backyard. And the more that we can begin to tap on this international aspect of how we innovate to bring these solutions to bear, we're going to get stronger. You know, the interesting thing about it is we have to get faster as well. And we've got to find what those enablers are. But today it takes 10 to 12 years to get a new molecule all the way through, registered, and to the market. That's entirely too long to solve this problem. We have to get faster at that. And it's going to take everybody looking at regulation to food security and safety to make sure it all works. But we got to get through it faster.
Jean-Luc, please. I'm wearing on innovations. You know, in my automotive time, the best innovation when we had, you know, this award and this big feedback was when we had no choice. We put the teams in the situation where the only way out is innovation. And then you get really tremendous ideas and very fast. This is as well one of the motivation of going to car. You know, people say, what are you going to do there? Poorest country on the planet. You could not imagine how creative is these people. And you cannot imagine how the willingness to change things is strong. And then you have halfway for innovation. And it went extremely fast. And I think what we need now to make it happen faster is to bring some competency. And I was discussing yesterday with one of local university executive about building some partnership. I would dream to have partnership between university here and our company within the forest, close to the Pygmies. You cannot imagine how many practices there are that we have forgotten. That way we can bring up to industrial solutions. Ideas are there. The question is how we make it benefit from everybody. And this is where the link can be done.
Martha, you see through the foundation, you see the problem in real life, every day.
In real life. And in talking about innovation, we look at innovation, you're talking about new molecules and deforestation and all these things. We believe that the innovation that we can lean into is a different view of how to solve hunger in our own community. So it's a complex problem, obviously. That's why we're all here talking about it. And complex problems don't have easy solutions at all. But we feel at the foundation we have evolved our philosophy. And we really believe that there are several factors that are impacting a stalemate of why there are more calories produced in the world now than ever, but also more hunger in the world. And that's just one of those, what we call conundrums in our universe, that that's the question, right? That's the holy grail of answers there. Our innovation comes in our belief that the not-for-profit world is broken at this moment, too dependent on donor money, which automatically means that they chase money more than they chase solutions. We pour billions of dollars a year into the not-for-profit area, but we don't solve a lot of problems. And as my foundation has evolved, we've gone from, and we're still very much entrenched in feeding children who face daily hunger. But we also believe that there has to be more than immediate feeding of people. Meal replacement itself is not a solution to hunger, at least at our local level. And we believe, obviously, I think there's could be very little disagreement, that the real issue is how to solve poverty. Because if you can solve poverty, increase opportunity for people, then it changes the entire conversation about food access. And that's what we are trying to do. So we have innovated internally at the foundation and have started to what I think are very impactful programs. One is our Food Fellows program, and the other is a model that we are launching this year in school called PAVA School, which is to return workable kitchens in our local school system. Indianapolis public schools have no working kitchens. So how do you feed children at school if you don't have a workable kitchen? How do you treat people who you're feeding who are in need with the dignity that a real meal provides? And how do you offer the members of the community opportunities for jobs, perhaps jobs in the workspace, in the food workspace, that can change their lives and give them ability to have thriving jobs? So that's where the foundation has morphed, and that's where the innovation we're bringing to this conversation.
Really, really interesting. This multivariable, there's not one single solution. Robert, I want to come to you. As you think about, Corteva, one of the largest integrated agricultural companies in the world, from crop protection all the way to the seed that's in the ground. How do you think about innovation in plant science? I mean, truly the science that's in the plant to really tackle this intersection that Martha really walked through, sustainability, food access, and really the economy that centers around it.
Yeah, so, yeah. We were two companies that came together, right? And we have research facilities here that really centers around our crop protection. And then over in Iowa, little company called Pioneer has a massive research and farming system there. And we're doing research around the world to find ways to make the grower more profitable, not only in protecting the crop, but also in how he grows, what he grows, and the hybrids, et cetera. The solution, again, has to be a piece of everything. And, not to get into the GMOs and everything else that is in the world, but we believe that the pie has to be a piece of a little bit of all of it to get to the solution. And one's not going to solve it. So we're doing extensive research around the world, 160-some-odd countries, where we have research plots going on to find ways to get ahead of how to make acre more productive in all walks of life. Just a small tidbit out here, just in our backyard, we have 36 different independent soil types that we mix and match to do testing for all different types of soils around the world. Because we're in Indianapolis, but our stuff's going everywhere. And that's how we're trying to play on this thing, is to get ahead of it in all facets of crops.
Really helpful. And Martha, I want to come back to you because you're the closest to the consumer of everyone up here. Really eager to hear your perspective, that perspective from the table, from the tabletop. What are consumers coming to you and saying, Martha, this is what I expect. I expect sustainability. I expect economics in the sense of I can actually afford this piece and I want to do something bigger. How do those conversations go?
Well, that, again, is a very complex answer, because our consumers in America, want what they want. They want sustainability, they want organic, they want whole, they want quality, but they don't want to pay for what it takes to produce those things. So there's a bit of a value proposition going on where you have to redefine how consumers perceive value. Is it the most for the most amount of food for the least amount of money, or is it the right quality of food for the money it takes to support everyone on the no pun intended, on the food chain.
Right.
Everyone who has a hand in producing a chicken salad sandwich, so to speak, how do you support them? And it, you know, it's a problem. We pay too little for food, and we are getting, and even in America right now, people are getting priced out of quality food. But it's that conundrum that we toggle between, right, Jeff? And I don't have the answer for it. We try to tell on the for-profit side, on the company side, we let our customers know that when they buy a sandwich at my restaurant, what they are supporting. They are supporting much more than just a sandwich. They're supporting the lives of all the people who touch the sandwich. And that includes giving them not just thriving wage jobs, but health insurance and access to opportunity, et cetera, et cetera. On the not-for-profit side, you know, we want to serve the children that we serve. We want to serve them as high quality food as we can give them, served in a system that allows them to have dignity and access to what they want without judgment that comes with so much food, of the hunger relief programs.
I would build on that. I mean, every research study I've seen in 20 years, taste cross nutrition always drive a lot of the decisions, and food is very personal, so I think everyone is allowed what they can afford, the choice. I do think there's examples we can point to that, you know, there's some things going on right now. This food security shock to the global system is a big deal. We've never had kind of four bullets at one time, and that's what's happened when you think about the war and you think about inflation, the supply chain breakdown, and the pandemic. I mean, this is going to be an interesting time the rest of this decade because of what's happened when the decade started. But I think as you come back to this other side, you have to point to say that I think there's consumers that we as an industry, mostly even on the food industry, the big companies, have promoted on the negative. Know this, know that, it must be better. Organic is definitely a choice. It's definitely something some people want, but it does come with a price. And so, you can point to cage-free. Everybody wanted cage-free. Now we have a very oversupply of cage-free eggs because people don't want to spend $3.50 a dozen. Sri Lanka in 2019, the whole country went organic. And rice production went 20% to the unfavorable. Prices went up, vegetables went up 4x, and there was food riots in the streets. So I think I think the other one is we want an environmental movement. Well, organic takes 78% more of the environment. A recent study on the beef consumer, those that have backed away or consuming less, the majority of it was because of the environment. It wasn't necessarily because of the diet. So I think a couple of these things is how we can connect the diet and the importance and the environment and the affordability, to Martha's point, and give consumers choice, but give them a little bit more education. The two big forces the next 8 years is how do we handle the food insecurity and the system that's broke on that and the environment. And believe it or not, it's a little bit contradictory to most consumers. Organic is not necessarily the most environmental. So how do we do that? I think that's going to be the next 8 years is going to play out more at the table than ever before.
And Jean-Luc, you are seeing that right now with your work in Africa, right? This idea where communication is critical, communication around blending this notion of forestry and soil health and crop production. That's a communication effort as much as a science effort.
Yes, of course, of course. And this is not so obvious when you start with, you know, are you doing forestry or are you doing food production? What are you doing? In fact, the vision we have is to break this frontier. You know, we're talking about having bio food, but what we're doing is limiting. Is, you know, where the cursor is going to be? We're not forbidding to use chemical inputs. When we need it, we use it. It's a combination. It's where we put these different items of production, taking care of what we already have. So take the tree. Can fix the soil, for example, combining both, then you have a better result. So basically what we're doing is breaking the different frontier of different visions. So what our model is an integrated model. So from the soil production together with the forest,
together with the transformation on one side. And the challenge is the competency to make this integrated model running. This is where we need really to have tight connections here and there and to build up this next model. But I'm fully convinced we will go from global vision, you know, production of crop, production of whatever, to multi-local solutions, integrated multi-local solutions. But each of these local solutions would be its own solution. That's why the key know-how item is the database. Is the database we're building, because this database in Sri Lanka will be different from the database in Bangui, will be different from the database in Salvador. But the way the vision needs to be the same, and we need to connect these local solutions.
The global food chain, distribution chain, production chain is so complex, and I wonder sometimes if it doesn't, if that also means that it is more sensitive to any risk than a smaller, more localized solution. Do you have a sense about that? Because I really don't know, but I liken it to the global financial system, where one tremor can create a worldwide decline. We're talking finances, but when you talk about food, you're talking about real lives, right?
And I think there's also an aspect we haven't talked about. There's a lot of politics in food.
Yes.
And a lot of politics in trade. And we can feed this world, you're right. We have enough calories, we have enough food right now to feed, you know, 8 billion people. But it's in the wrong place, and it doesn't cross borders very easily as well. So I think that's another factor that adds to the complexity.
And do we ever talk about food waste as openly as we should?
Right.
You know, 40% of food that's purchased in the United States is wasted. And that's at the consumer household level.
I want to dig into this idea of politics around food, Martha. I think this is a really good point. Jeff, the system you set up, Robert, you touched on this earlier, so I'm going to come to you with this. We look at this labyrinth, right? It's the only way I know to describe, maybe patchwork is a different way to describe it, a regulatory environment, certainly here in the States, that is challenging. We've talked about that. But this is global. I mean, the global regulatory environment, decisions that are made affect trade, which ultimately affect access to food. Share with us more about just what is this challenge? How does this network work, and what can be done to improve it?
Yeah, great question. And if I could sum it up and write a book on it, I wouldn't have to sit here for the rest of the day. I'd be all sitting on the beach somewhere. But no, seriously, you know, the more consistent we can have out of regulations, the better off we are going to be. You know, when you talk about, you know, 10 years to get products to market, and the global supply chain that we got in every country has different needs. You know, a little known guy by the name of Steve Jobs made a comment that it's much harder to be simple than it is complex. And that's what we're faced with. Is, you know, it should be simple, but it's not. It's extremely complex. And we have to find a way to shift that. When you look at the you know, the global market from a supply chain standpoint, we're totally out of balance. And that balance is critical for moving forward to say, how do we begin to solve this? We've got to get things back in balance from a global economy, from, you know, geopolitical walls that have got to come down. And together we can find them. Solve these problems, because, you know, as Jeff's talking about, there's plenty of calories in the world, but it's in the wrong place. And jumping over these barriers and the fact that things are changing makes it difficult to get ahead of this. And we've got to have some consistency there with our governments around the world.
That's why I think the micro environment of this state being not difficult, but unified, and I'm excited, Corteva, big news, Corteva, the largest agricultural companies in the world deciding its home here. I think that having a state and having an economically driven, hey, collaborative environment, let's get, if you're out here considering coming here, let, you know, this environment can create collaboration, because the rest of the world's so complex. I think, to Robert's point, that this really opens an opportunity, I think.
Yeah, I fully agree. You know, we have the makings, the building blocks here of of being able to build something special in Indiana. You know, you look at Lilly's here, obviously, Elanco, and a lot of other organizations that center around ag, which is all about food.
That's right.
We have the building blocks, and again, it's putting those together and a few more in to begin to say, okay, let's start something here that can move out.
Robert, I love that perspective, and I want to share just a quick thought, because as you both have talked, it's solidified in my mind. When you look at Elanco on the animal side, when you look at Corteva on the plant side, and both of your core values, key areas we talked about today is around sustainability, there is no reason why Indianapolis, why Indiana can't lead the global discussion, be really the epicenter, to use a word from you, Jeff, for sustainability globally. I mean, we have everything from seed in the ground, to crop in the field, to going to feed the animal that feeds up. That we have the full system. Add on the nation's largest medical school. Add on the juggernaut that is Eli Lilly. Add on the health insurance that's the juggernaut that is Anthem. The assets.
Yeah.
The assets are here to actually blend the things that we've talked about. Sustainability, economics, and nutrition. All of those key pieces are here. We have time for one more question. I see the red light blinking from the side of my eyes here. What's one thing? So everyone has come here from all across the country, all around the world. It is really critical to me. We have a desire to act in Indiana, to go do. Everybody gets back to work on Monday. They get back to their office. They jump in. What can they do to really address this food security, food sustainability issue? Jeff?
Well, it's a great, I just say, you know, there's no industry, I believe, in Indiana, about to speak, that can probably have, that has more, we're relevant, so we're responsible. So there's an opportunity, and there's a positive end to this story, and I think there'll be a lot of positive at the end of this decade. It started with some turbulence. I think to the earlier, innovation happens in turbulence. Great transformations happen in turbulence. Indiana will play a role in feeding the world, improving the health, and cooling the climate. We've got all the makeup to do that. I think when you get actionable, I'll come back to people. I mean, we need to put the center on people. I spoke yesterday to our 100 interns, or however many there were in the room, and over a third of them this year are international. We have to bring people here, and they have to look around and see role models and places that they can make community. If we do that, you know, innovation and transformations happen because, I say, Elanco's only where we are today because we saw, wow, we impact life, and, you know, animals improve the lives of people. That purpose unleashed people. We have to unleash the next era of talent, and I think that's what it is. And we have to make this city, in 5 years, one that everyone's talking about. We need to be the next Nashville, sorry, or Austin. We do, and we can. So to me, anything you can all do to make this a magnet for talent, to use the firms you need to use to get them here, well, it's great. To me, it's people.
Excellent. Martha?
Well, this is where I'm really good at answering a question that was not asked. I'm sorry.
Good job, Madam Prosecutor.
Former prosecutor, I'm taking the conversation where I want to take it. So, you know, all the large companies aside that are represented here, I am a very small company. I have 350 employees. Our foundation is extremely small. We have an operating budget of significantly less than $1 million a year, and in the not-for-profit world, that is considered tiny. We still are making an incredible impact. And I don't ever want anyone to believe for a minute that it only requires large and fast to create solutions that affect so many people in our own backyard. That's it.
Well, that's a great point. Jean-Luc, one thing folks can do when they get home on Monday to really affect food security and sustainability.
So, you know, in Africa, the next 25 years, you're going to have additional 500 million people to feed. This is a fantastic market.
It is.
This is a fantastic market, but I strongly believe we have to think and to approach this market differently, in a more inclusive way. Because again, you cannot imagine how pertinent solution you can find on the ground, how you can be quick when you integrate people in the way you think, you will rethink this industry. It doesn't mean that what we did before is an issue. The point is how we adapt what we already gathered to this next reality, which is going to be the biggest market. Yeah. So this link needs to be done, and of course funding today, we have to invest in food. We have to invest in new markets in food and to create the investment vehicle to be able to invest today. It's extremely difficult to find ways to invest there. So,
Robert, final words?
Yeah, final one thing. You know, to add to what's been added here, it's learn the facts. Mm-hmm. And let's make sure that we're educated on what the true facts are about all the issues, so then we can begin to make solutions. But on Monday, when you walk in your office or jump in your car or whatever, you can make an effort to learn the facts, to get more educated on what the real issues are and what the science is behind all the different options. And I'm not saying you have to pick one. What I'm saying is it's going to take all of it. But we got to understand the facts and get away from the things that we think we believe.
That was Jeff Simmons, CEO of Elanco, Martha Hoover, founder and CEO of Patachou Inc., Jean-Luc Tatte, founder and CEO of Horus Impact, and Robert King, Executive Vice President of Crop Protection at Corteva. Thank you so much for tuning in to this bonus episode of Ag Bioscience. You can get the latest Ag Bioscience news and insights from discussions just like this by subscribing wherever you listen to podcasts. And while there, you can always access our entire library of archived episodes. And as always, you can learn more online at agrinovusindiana.com. On behalf of the entire Agrinovus team, I'm Mitch Frazier, thanking you for listening. We look forward to seeing you real soon.
This podcast is a product of Inside Indiana Business, hosted by Gary Dick and produced by Kayla Chittister and Joe Ullery. More people get Indiana business news from Inside Indiana Business than any other source.